Hi, and welcome to the Just Riding Along Show.
Hello, and welcome to episode 246. Tonight's show is brought to you by Pine Sap and Big Bike Fatigue. Another one of my opening lines that won't make it into the actual show title that's typed into the little podcast doodad.
I might put Big Bike Fatigue in there. That's pretty good.
My week has been pretty uneventful in terms of cool things to talk about. I only have to say been working more on the trial, getting that all set up. Things are going great. Everything's in a good spot. And that will happen between now and when this show is posted. So you'll get to hear all about it in the next show. And it is 2026. And I think the only thing that I'm going to give a little rant on during my time here is every brand needs to make their warranty process better. It just needs to be faster and more streamlined. And I'm not going to name any names, but I can't even remember who it is. But like, I can't use iPhone photos on one of the brands that we work with. So I have to take screenshot or like convert the files and shit. And it's like, dude, it's.
You can tell your iPhone to take photos in JPEG instead of the HEIC thing.
Yeah, it's also 2026 and there's like 8 million iPhones shops.
That shouldn't really be a thing, but continue. Keep going.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Most people use an iPhone. Some people don't.
Yeah, I mean.
That's okay. We're not judging.
According to this article that I found.
And I'm going to say something slightly contradictory. I'm weird. I'm a PC person. I own Apple products as well, but I mean like desktop computer person. They're just easier to use, in my opinion. I fucking hate mobile shit. There's a time and a place for mobile stuff, but goddamn it. Especially if you're doing more complicated shit, let me just do it on the computer. I can do it so much faster and better.
You gotta use the big screen.
Give me the big screen.
I'm not doing the warranty on my phone, but I'm pulling my little pocket computer out and taking photos and then sending them via the AirDrop to my work Apple computer. And then I have to jump through hoops.
Gotcha.
I mean, it's the same reason when brands tell me that we can't support a diagnostic tool on Mac. No, you just choose not to. Like, just fucking do it. Like, so.
But anyway, my argument there is I really want to have both. If you're going to have the mobile app, you got to have a good desktop app too. Like, you just got to.
I don't want to do any work stuff on my phone, but I have to take photos, you know, and I just want the file type to be supported. It's so simple.
Sure.
And some really big brands out in the world, they don't have like a dealer warranty portal still. So you can track things and whatnot. And it's just, and there's other really big brands that you have a dealer portal, but then you have to go find the email and then reply to the email because you can't reply within the dealer portal itself. Like, Christ almighty. Like, just, yeah. So that's my time. Kenny, what have you been doing?
Literally nothing. It was hot as balls this weekend. So I decided not to do moto. I've done moto every weekend for 5 years. So I took one off. So that's it. I'm sure I'll think of something.
All right. Does that mean it's my turn?
It's your turn.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, I also haven't been doing that much because it is also hot as balls here. Probably not as hot as where Kenny is, but it's hot as balls. And I've been having hormone problems and I'm very frustrated. And this is a big, this is a big step away from bike content, but it's relevant to a lot of people. Because a lot of people who listen to our show are either in a relationship with someone who was born with female sex hormones or is someone who was born with female sex hormones. And at some point, when you're a kid in most public schools, I split up the boys and the girls, and they're like, girls, you're going to start bleeding out of your vagina soon. And
yay!
And like, but when you're close to 50... you'll stop. And that's called menopause. And you might have some hot flashes. And that's it. That's just fucking it. They don't tell you about all of the bullshit that happens along with that. And so it just catches you off guard because, you know, like, unless you just go out and research it yourself or your friends with someone who's older who's going to tell you what's going to happen, then that's the only way you know. And otherwise, you just don't fucking know, and it really fucking sucks. Like, yesterday, I got a little too hot. One of the things your body does when you get really warm is it dilates all of your blood vessels. Well, that can cause a serious drop in blood pressure. And if you have low estrogen, that can get a lot worse. I almost passed out, and I spent the second half of the day just on the couch. I was by myself. Matt was at work. I had to just about crawl into the shower because I tried to lay on the couch, and I'm like, I'm still just too hot. It's too hot in my house for me to cool off. And so I had to like get in the shower and turn the cold water on and cool off for a few minutes, and then just lay on the couch with like a cold towel on my chest. And it just really fucking sucked. And no one tells you that that's a possibility until it just starts happening. And I think that's bullshit. I think we need to prepare young women better for this time in their lives. And there's a lot of other shit that I'm dealing with too, but I just won't go too deep into it. But it is mental and physical hell on earth, pretty much.
We're going to scare the shit out of the kids.
Yeah, you need to not scare them, just prepare them. Like, fuck.
Hey, young girl, you're going to bleed from your nether regions. Later, you're going to want to stab everyone you know with a, like, hot, I don't know, kebab skewer or something, because fuck everybody.
I mean, I've always been like sensitive to like lots of noise, but like, so like the chickens, when I don't know, anyone who has chickens knows this, but a lot of you don't, you all like chicken nuggets anyway. When they lay an egg, when a hen lays an egg, she jumps up out of the nest box and starts fucking like cawing, just like like making a bunch of noise, and that gets all the other chickens worked up, and they do the same thing. This morning, they just started doing it when I went in there to, like, check their water. And I literally just wanted to just slaughter every... I wanted to just kill a flock of chickens. Like, I literally thought, do I have enough time in the day to do this and be able to put them all in the freezer in a way that's going to, like, keep the meat cold? It's like, I don't have enough ice. I have to get ice, and I don't feel good, and that's going to be too much work. And it's just like, I wanted to do that. I seriously thought about doing it.
These are some at-risk chickens.
Like, I just, it's fucking terrible. And like that, those intrusive thoughts cross your mind on a somewhat regular basis of like...
Hourly?
Not quite hourly. Well, sometimes hourly, but usually not hourly. But my God, it just, it sucks. It sucks real bad. And getting the right dosage of the hormones with the hormone replacement has been tedious, so I'm still working through that. But I don't know, like when I wake up in the morning, I have no, after 5 hours of sleep, because that's all I can do is like fucking 5 hours of sleep every night. That's why I'm grouchy when we record, because I'm tired and I don't feel good. And I don't know, like when I wake up in the morning after 5 hours of sleep, I don't know how the day is going to go. I don't know if in 2 hours I'm going to feel like slaughtering 10 chickens, or if I'm going to be pretty normal. I don't even know what pretty normal is right now, because I felt bad for so long. So yeah, it's shitty, and I wish I'd been better prepared for it, but that's what I've been doing this week.
And to make Kenny happy, he said that our fire was rookie numbers. Well, we bumped it up to 96,000 acres, so you're welcome.
Well done.
I did go for an e-bike ride today. I didn't feel great, but there's this one road in the elk hunting unit where I'm going to hunt in September that basically just goes right up to tree line. And so I rode up that today. I took it pretty easy. I hiked a little bit, but I kept it real mellow because I didn't want to get overheated. I like stopped and dipped my sun shirt in the creek, which was really nice. And yeah, that was pretty much it. I haven't been working in Leadville. There is a fire that's about 6 miles west of town right now, and the shop's just been really slow. And I might try to work out some kind of, I'm going to talk to Raphael, who owns the shop. We might do some kind of like a special shop fundraiser, because his business is really slow right now. And I really want to see him succeed. He's a really great guy, and it's a great shop. They do a lot of, you know, like service to the community. So I really, you know, I'd hate to see just like one bad summer be the end to his shop. So we might try to help him out. Just stay tuned for something like that if you are interested in helping out a little shop in Leadville.
New shit. I'm going to do my Vanderpool ran a 56 tooth one by setup with XTR in the Le Tour.
Damn.
Fancy.
Now, we're going to just rattle through some drop bar stuff. Canyon's going to release a Grail that clears a 57 millimeter tire.
They have, there's another article about.
Yep, we're getting there.
Okay.
We're getting there. That this is the Grail.
And I have a little bit of beef with it, but keep going.
Let's see. Obed has the TTR, which is a drop bar mountain bike with suspension on the front. I mean, it's just a cutthroat. Like, yeah. So that's hot. Let's see. And then, yeah, Canyon has the new Exceed CFR Gravel Adventure Ready drop bar option.
What I, maybe it's on their website, but I kind of doubt it. Are they going to at least tell people that their mountain bike size is not going to be the proper size to get in that bike if they get the drop bar version? Because I was just looking at this drop bar bike that they have in the photos, and it definitely has some like fucking hand pads zip tied to the handlebars behind the hoods. Like, whoever has set this bike up and ridden it a little bit has definitely just been like, yeah, I can't reach the hoods, so I have to keep my hands like 3 inches behind them, and so I'm gonna zip tie some fucking rubber pads to the bars.
Because
this is just for our listeners who may not quite understand what I'm saying. Think about on your mountain bike, your hands are in line, more or less, depending on, you know, there's sweep and rides and stuff, but more or less, your hands are about in line with the clamp of your stem, right? It's a flat bar. Mm-hmm. When you add a drop bar on there, your hands go a few inches in front of the clamp of your stem. So it stands to reason you need a shorter reach on your bike if you're going to use drop bars. If you look at like the reach of most drop bar bikes versus the reach of most mountain bikes, they're different. The average for a given size is going to be different. It's going to be a shorter reach on the drop bar bike. So don't just run out and get the same size. This looks like a cool bike. It's pretty fucking hot. Like, looks neat. But like, don't just run out and get the same size bike if you're going to get a drop bar mountain bike. Like, pay attention to that reach number, because that's going to make a big difference in how comfortable you are, especially if you're going to run some of those like super wide kind of kooky drop bars.
No, this ships with 40s.
Yeah, I mean, this looks like it has a normal handlebar on it, more or less, but yeah, so don't... Yeah.
I mean, I could ride the small in this bike as a drop bar.
Yeah, so it's pretty fucked up if they're not telling people, like giving them some sort of sizing advice. I don't know if they are or not, and that bike's not on... It says in the article here that that bike is not on the Canyon USA website yet, so I can't... I mean, I guess I can go to the Euro website, but, you know, just be an educated buyer when you're looking into that.
And this article's like, maybe that'll change if someone wins Leadville on it. Well, you can't ride drop bars in Leadville, so... I mean, yes, they do make a flat bar one, but I don't... Yeah. In more road stuff, let's talk about these new Reserve, what are they called? 48-53 gravel wheels. So they're 30 millimeter internal. The coolest part is they have this huge... Like, most mountain bike rims have gone to, like, a very wide bead in order to help prevent pinch flats, and they've actually hollowed that out. So, like, you get a really big shelf to prevent a pinch flat, but they cut them or didn't put any material in there, so you don't have to carry that around. It's called the hollow hook construction. So, there you go. What else do we want to talk about?
Let's see. You talked about that.
People in the Tour are running wide tires. Surprise, surprise.
How wide are they?
35s, I'm guessing.
I mean, pretty much everybody's running at least 30s, I think. And I think there's people running out to like 35s. But I think 30, kind of that 32 number is getting pretty darn common.
Are they still road racing? Are they still doing tubulars?
I don't think so.
Okay.
No, no one's even making those anymore.
Damn. That was like the shit when I road raced, was you had your race wheels with your tubulars glued onto them.
Yeah, I mean, back when everything sucked, they were pretty cool, I guess, from a ride compliance and quality and lightness standpoint. Yeah. But they need to die.
They were super
awesome. Need to die in fire.
I mean, I think that somewhat goes back to what we talked about on the last episode, where new bikes, and this is from like a more of an amateur standpoint, not necessarily pro road racing, but...
Oh, wait. Zip makes one. They have the 303 Firecrest tubular chill.
Jeez, that's crazy. Well, when I'm Supreme Leader, you're going to have to get like a special license to run tubulars.
But I think that kind of goes back to what we were saying last week. Like from an amateur road racing standpoint, if you get a nice road bike, it probably comes with some pretty fucking light wheels on it. And you're just going to race those. Like it's going to have nice wheels if you buy a nice bike. So it makes sense that you don't necessarily need a set of tubulars because I think between tubeless and clincher stuff, all that, like it's a lot more solid than it used to be.
Well, and the gap has narrowed considerably. Yeah. So in terms of performance. So what else is on our radar?
I don't know. There wasn't a ton of stuff.
Yeah, not a whole lot going on. It looks like two Vermont trail builders got a massive fine for making trails many years ago in a state forest. A $35,000 fine.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
So don't do that. It's tempting, but yeah, probably don't do that.
There's a company called SideQuest that's doing 3D printed bike parts, or I guess giving you the files to 3D print your own bike parts. I just opened it up, so I haven't read the article, but it looks kind of cool.
I mean, there's only so many plastic parts that you can make that are okay for a bicycle, right?
They're like,
yeah, this looks like it's kind of like non-structural.
It's stuff. Like stuff to attach tools to your swap box and stuff. Swap boxes need to die too.
Why?
They're stupid.
I like having a hidey hole.
Yeah, hidey holes are dumb and they need to go away. I do not like them. I do not want them. We don't need them.
I like not having to have that stuff in a bag on my bike.
Okay, cool.
It's nice to have it in a bag.
I don't hate them, nice. But if my bike had one, I wouldn't use it.
I mean, it's not like a deal breaker, but I think it's a useful thing to have.
I think it's a deal breaker, or I think it's a non-deal breaker for me. Like, I don't care. They rattle. Fucking everything has to be packed in there perfectly just so every time, and none of it's watertight, so then your shit gets all rusty because there's no air moving through it, and it's not like it's in a bag on your top tube that you're opening and, like, getting snacks in and out of, and you still need a place on your bike to put things that you might want to get to, you know. Oh, my enduro bike has a swap box. Oh, shit, my enduro bike still has no way to hold any food. Like, just...
Okay, well, it's like you got more room for snacks in your top tube bag if your other shit's, like, stored inside your down tube.
What happens when I've folded a tube up 19 different times and I still can't get all my shit in the down tube when it's just a... And, like... You got to use a fucking CO2. There is no pump that's going to fit in there that will actually inflate your tire in a manner.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's definitely, like, a downfall to it.
Just dumb. I just want them to go away. I can't wait till bikes get simpler. Like, yeah, until you've had the luxury of trying to remove a swap box or a storage hole. Swap box is a thing, but a storage hole rim, and you're dremeling plastic out of a carbon frame because the little brass nut cert is turning in the plastic and is all stripped out and bullshitted, so you're cutting bolts off of the top of the plastic on the top of the frame, and you got like 19 layers of masking tape because you're trying to not scratch up Maggie's bike. And yeah, it's just, you know what, I've never had to cut off a bike top tube bag, never had to cut one off, so yeah, I'm pretty salty about that one. But what else do we have to talk about?
I really got nothing. Might be a short show. Do we have any questions?
Well, we've got this. UBI was sold. United Bicycle Institute has been sold to a father-son team. The Sutphin, I don't know how to pronounce that. The Sutphin family sold to them. And then GoPro, not doing good.
Yeah, GoPro has not been doing good for 10 years. I see that same article every week.
Well, did you read it this time?
Not really. It sounds like the CEO is the old CEO is stepping in to give him money for some reason.
Yeah. First quarter revenue was down 26%. In April, they laid off 23% of their global workforce. And the NASDAQ has notified GoPro that its stock could be delisted because its price share fell under the $1 for 30 consecutive business days threshold.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to be a dick, but what the fuck is $20 million going to do for that company? Like, nothing. It's just weird news.
Debt or something, I don't know. It's
a shame, right? Like, I think they make a decent product. I have no beef against GoPro. It's just when iPhones are that good, that's a problem. And also Chinese companies are coming in making really, really good stuff. You can get basically China GoPros that are 75% as good for a quarter of the price. And there's also big boy competitors that are not full Chinese companies like the Insta360. And there's probably some other brands I'm forgetting. But there's a lot of other really good products out there, unfortunately. So It sucks. It sucks. I've owned 2 or 3 GoPros over the years. They've been fine.
Yeah. We never talked about that tuned mass damper for the gravel bike, did we?
I think we mentioned
it. Yeah, we talked about it. We were going to save it for Kenny, and Kenny was like, yeah, that's a thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Next.
Yeah, I think it was more, my take was, okay, I just don't see it doing much on a bike of that style on a gravel bike. Maybe I'm totally wrong, though. Maybe that's where it's better. Maybe it's a better small bump compliance thing. Don't know. I really have yet to ride one, so I can't give a great opinion. Yeah. I wish I had more cool stuff to talk about. It's a real slow week. We have no questions.
We got
a couple. Let me bring it
up. Let's jump into those.
This one will be a little discussion. I'm sure Kenny is going to be the, I think he's going to know the most about this. So this is from JM. He says, Kenny and crew, Rick Vosper recently penned a piece on Bicycle Retailer proposing creation of a federal excise tax on bikes to increase funding for biking causes and participation modeled on the Recreational Boating and Fishing Foundation's Take Me Fishing campaign. He pitches an approximate 3% excise tax equal to an additional $150 on the cost of a $5,000 bike. What are your thoughts on this? Do you think this would help expand and encourage more people to be part of biking or just be another avenue for certain groups and industry consultants to pad their pockets?
Yep.
Do you think it would help improve current trails and bike infrastructure and future biking access? Do you support these kinds of universal government taxes where the money is collected from many people and held/distributed at a higher government level? Or do you think the model of more specific and localized funding, city and state park fees, local trail organizations, riding group chapters, etc., is more productive at providing the sports for the sports biking needs?
Boom, nailed it. So I think the latter heavily. I'm not an expert when it comes to this, not an expert when it comes to politics, but just seat in my pants, gut feeling is that last statement of let the local folks do it. And the reason I think that is let the local place do it. If they're going to get behind it, that's awesome. For example, Utah, for the most part, is pretty darn behind cycling. And they choose to do that, and that markets Utah to a specific group of people who then might want to move to Utah, right? So let the local area do what they want to do with it. I don't think you can force this issue and force a blanket over everybody to like embrace cycling. I don't think that's ever going to work. Why don't you just let people spend their money where they live and live in a place where they want to live because it's got the shit that they want?
Yeah. And I think the problem would be if you did such a large blanket thing like that, you're going to have some places where I don't know, maybe they get some money from the federal government that's, hey, this is for bike infrastructure. And they're going to be like, what the fuck? People ride bikes.
And they won't even know if they're like forced to do it. They're going to buy shit that's irrelevant because they're not subject matter experts. It's just not a good idea at all. And I think it leaves too many middlemen people. It's going to leave too much room for corruption. I just don't think that's a good idea at all.
Yeah, like you're going to have some places where that type of thing, that's the problem. Like some places would get that money and actually put it to good use. Other places, and probably more than the first group, are either going to not really know what to do with it and do a bad job at spending it. Like, I don't know, just put like a 1 mile worth of bike lane in some place where it doesn't fucking matter from a connectivity standpoint, or they're going to be like, well, my buddy Jimbo pours concrete, so we're going to put in a bike path and I'm going to give him triple the money because I've got this like thing I have to spend on a bike path. You know, I'm going to like give him 3 times what it's worth because he's my buddy and, you know, I scratch his back, he scratches mine. Like, yeah, so I think there's too much waste potential with something at the highest level like that.
My big problem is I don't know how you would distribute the funds in an equitable manner if it was done. Well, I have two problems. One, I don't know how you distribute the funds in an equitable manner at the federal level, because it's almost like I see both sides of the argument, and I'm going to give examples of both. Oh, here's a really affluent neighborhood or area of the country, and they bought a shit ton in dollars of bikes this year. We need to throw the money at them. Well, they're probably an affluent community that's already funding that through local organizations and PACS dollars. So do they need more? The flip side of that is, oh man, this place collected no money, and then suddenly there's a mountain bike trail built where there's like a town of 17 people. You know, so there's the happy medium is somewhere in the middle. And like Kenny said, there's too many middlemen that would be making those decisions. So I'm not into it. And I'm going to be quite honest that the outdoor industry is definitely suffering from price fatigue right now. So a 3% is non-negligible. You know,
I agree.
And it's almost worse for the... And where do we draw the line? Is it going to be 3% on complete bikes? Okay. Rich dickheads are just going to buy frame sets and get them built up by their local shop to avoid it. Oh, man, I can save you 3% of 15,000, which is $500. I'll just buy all the parts and put this together, you know, or whatever. And I don't like that. And the people, like, it doesn't affect that person. It affects the person that is buying that $800 hardtail. That's all they can afford. And now that bike is $825. And if you're at home doing the jack off hand right now, well, they can't buy a bottle cage. They can't buy a pump. And yeah.
Yeah. I mean, do some of the smaller level stuff like sittings, like do the funds that are out there now need to be allocated more in a way that makes biking more accessible to communities other than just the affluent spots? Yeah, they could probably do a better job of that in some places.
Well, and to be really ugly about it, what are we going to do? We're going to build a really nice bike path through a really poor community that most people are working multiple jobs and don't have the financial resources to purchase a bicycle, let alone the time to enjoy it. And now we just have another, like...
Well, no, I mean, you can look at research on that. Like, I mean, Memphis is a good example. Like, the first Greenway that was built in Memphis, like, it went through some, maybe not the first, but like parts of the Memphis Greenway go through neighborhoods that my mom would say, that's a bad neighborhood. We don't drive through there. And those people get out and use the bike path. They walk on it. They don't necessarily ride a bike on it. Taco's upset. But it's not a bad thing to get more people safe places to walk and recreate, or, you know, even if some, you know, mom's walking and like the kids are on their Walmart bikes, it's fine. Like, it's not necessarily a bad thing to have those things in poor neighborhoods. It's actually a good thing. It's good for the community, even if not everyone uses it. But it's not an undesirable thing. And yeah, like, you could probably do a better job of, you know, expanding into poorer areas of large cities. But, you know, I think that a federal excise tax is not going to be the right way to do that.
Yeah.
All right. What's our other question? This is from Justin. Justin says, if you were to be a bicycle, which make, model, year, and trim level would you be? Discuss. Anyone want to go first?
Yeah, I'm really close. Just give me a second. I am a 2011 Cannondale Flash Carbon.
Okay.
That old lefty is going to need some love, and it's going to be kind of needy, but the bike's always going to work. You know, it's got XT 1x10 on it, so it's good. It's going to work. It's going to be fine. And the people that love that bike love that bike, and the people that don't like that bike are never going to like that bike. Like, it's a very polarizing bike. It's either extremely loved or just discarded. So
I have no idea where to start on this. And I even read the question like before we started recording.
So I'll have a couple thoughts out loud. The way I live my life is pretty, I've got a lot of extremes. I have really nice new shit, and then I refuse to spend money on other shit. Like right now, cars. Yeah. I have two cars. Both work great. They do everything I need them to do, and neither are expensive and they're old. But I have a brand new Husqvarna 350 and a pretty pricey e-bike. So, yeesh, I don't know. I truly don't.
I know what Andrea is.
You can say it because I don't know.
Andrea is a karate monkey. She's
I can just do what the fuck ever.
Yep. Like carbon wheels and suspension fork. You can go race some single speed on that thing. Put all the luggage on it. You can go hunting. It's kind of scratched up, beat up. There's some stickers on there, aka tattoos. But like it's that bike just works. Maybe the Flash isn't a bike that would just work, because that bike probably wouldn't work that well. I don't work that well either though. So
all right, I know what I am. I am my bar bike. It's actually at it's my parents' house now. They use it on their trainer, and it is a giant CADX carbon, like the first carbon frame that they ever made.
I saw one of those today in town on a bike rack.
Yeah, they're fucking dope. So it's a purple giant CADX. It's got a relatively new MRP carbon 29er fork on it. It has a Hope front disc brake. It has a rear XTR V brake. It's got 2.5 Supermoto 26 tires on it. I think it's got a 27.5 front possibly. Can't remember
that. I think that's right, because at one point you had that set up on a different bike, and didn't you have to file some of a 26 inch rigid fork out to get it to clear?
I can't remember. I've done so much kook shit over the years. What else does it have? It's 1x10. It's got DT 240 hubs, so it's like this mixture of like old shit and nice shit, a little bit of new shit. So there you go.
You know, right now I kind of feel like that shit bike that I built a few years ago at Absolute Bikes on a New Year's Eve. We had like a frame that was a warranty frame.
Yeah.
It had a crack in it somewhere. And I literally just used some parts. I might have had some parts, but I think the rest of them were just parts out of like the shit bin at the bike shop.
Everything came. I don't remember why I know what it was. It was
I built it just to get around town and not have to lock it up.
And that bike wanted to kill you.
It did. It had like the wrong headset in it, because I was going to buy a headset for the shit bike.
And it was a 29er, and it had road tires on it. So that motherfucker would pedal strike. Like, if you thought about pedaling while cornering.
Not even cornering, just a gentle turn.
Yeah. Like, if you weren't riding perfectly straight with your pedals perfectly level, you may as well just grab a handful of front brake and jump over the bars and like go ahead and slide on the concrete. Like, you're fucked.
Yeah.
Those were fun times, though.
Scott wrecked in the bike shop riding it around.
So the story goes, no, you had that together before New Year's Eve, but we were riding it in the shop on New Year's Eve, and Scott was wearing like a Marmot or Patagonia North, like a puffy jacket, and he was ripping. He was like 4 or 5 Dales deep.
Yeah.
And he snagged his coat on a bike that was hanging for service, and it slammed his ass onto the ground into a filing cabinet. Like there was no skid.
Scott's not a small man either.
And if I remember the situation correctly, he was lying there and you were like, Scott, are you okay? And he was just like, no. And you, like, he wasn't even making noise. And you were like, Scott, you have to say something or make a noise. And he was like, that wasn't good.
Oh, man, that was fun. That was one of the more fun days of work.
But those were fun times, though. I remember building so many weird kook bikes, because just weird stuff would happen. You worked at the bike shop and some customer abandoned a frame or a bike, or something got warrantied and the company didn't want it back, or just weird stuff. And you'd end up with a bunch of parts and you're like, well, I need to put these together. So I'm going to put them together.
The brake on it was a like an XT lever with.
You had mixed matched Shimano and Avid parts.
Okay.
And like the brakes worked.
Yeah, the brakes worked, but like, it was like different levers than what the calipers were.
Like, none of this was safe, and none of this was even lauded or thought about as safe.
Yeah.
This was 100% the jankiest bicycle-shaped object you could imagine.
Yep.
Yeah. It was like the Daewoo of bicycles.
That's pretty much, that's the bike that I feel like right now.
Do you remember?
Like, I remember one.
Go ahead.
I rode it to Safeway once, and I like got to Safeway and I just threw it on the sidewalk and walked inside, and I remember some white lady like clutching her pearls like, oh God.
Do you remember that Kona explosive that I found zip tied in the rafters at outdoors.
It was green.
It was silver, I think.
Okay. But you ran that with a Nexus 3 speed.
Yeah. So it was...
You raced Slobberknocker on that
thing. I know. It was a 27.5. Wasn't it a 27.5 native frame or something really goofy like that?
I don't
know. No, it was 26 that cleared
27.5. Oh, okay. And 27.5 at the time was very rare, like super weird. I had to find some Stans rim hoops, and there was like two tires you could find that were mountain bike 27.5 tires. And it was a single speed only frame. So, but I wanted some gears, so I put a Nexus 3-speed hub. It was a 1x3. Yeah, that was a goofy-ass bike. It worked okay. It was goofy, though.
Yeah. Yeah, that race pissed me off so bad.
I don't even remember it. I felt like it was just a gravel race, right?
It was. It was a gravel race out of Lake Sylvia.
Gotcha.
Oh, yeah.
And we went out and we thrashed ourselves for, it was like 75 miles. I mean, and you got to remember, this is like gravel before gravel. So this is like 2013, 14, 2012. I still have the belt buckle from it. It was 2012. And fucking Fred Phillips.
Oh, yeah. I had a good race, but Fred Phillips was not a good race organizer.
No. He thought it was hilarious. Like, we hung around for forever, and they did a tandem podium, because, like, two people showed up on tandems, and they didn't do a single-speed podium, but, like, 9 or 10 people showed up for single-speed, and I would have been on the podium, and the only reason I hung out sweating my two testicles at the time off was because I was like, well, it's kind of rude to not, like, be around for podium photos, and it's kind of cool, like yada yada, and they just didn't do it. And I remember being like, well, what the fuck? So, but the rest of the races he put on were generally pretty okay.
Yeah, but he always had some kind of like fucking weird thing like that that he would fuck up, and I think I eventually just stopped wanting to do his races and then moved so it didn't matter.
Yeah, like one time at 6 hours of the Hot Spring 6 hours, what was that race called? It was at Cedar Glades. It might have been called Hot Spring 6 hours. It was confusing because it wasn't 6 hours of Cedar Glades.
Spa City
6 hour. Yep, that's where Kenny rode with Tinker briefly.
Sure did. We did really good that year. I think that was, they had team options, right?
Yeah, did you and Jeff do a team?
Yeah, we won.
Yeah, and like you and Tinker were like chatting, and then you descended that like old forest fire road thing that had kind of devolved into single track, but was definitely not single track in terms of like, where you hit a tree, there was just like definitely a single track line.
Sure.
And you said that you went over the top with him and then like suddenly he was gone.
Yeah. Yeah. We so sorry to rehash it. We talked about it on a couple shows 15 years ago or something. But the moral of that story was I was on single speed and I was just surprised where he was going fast and where he wasn't, because I rode with him on the flat and some of the climbs. And his pace was fine. Now, understand, I was on a team. Maybe a two-person team? Three-person?
Yeah, so you're going like cross-country.
So pace. I was going as like hard as I could per lap. And he was solo. So he was doing an actual full six-hour day. And this was like half to three-quarters of the way through the day. So just understand that. But I was riding with him for a significant amount of time. Like, I don't know, at least 10 or 20 minutes of like flat and climb. But... And I was a okay descender, definitely faster than most of the other people in the field.
And where he dropped you wasn't really technical.
No, it wasn't technical. It was just you had to go fast. It was traction limited flat corners, basically.
And it was like all pine duff.
Something like that, right? Like it had a couple little things, but it wasn't like technical. You weren't just like going down rock waterfalls and stuff like that. It was just slightly downhill, few percent grade, and you're just like going fast. But that's where he dropped me. And I was so shocked because I thought he was just going to wax me with power. But he waxed me, and it makes sense, right?
Well, he probably just pedaled over the top and was doing the same power down.
Probably that. But also, it's just conservation of energy. He just went fast where it was easy to go fast, which was on the downhill. So anyway, that's the story. It was fun to ride with Tinker, and he was a nice guy. Chatted with him. We did a little pre-ride before, and he joined us for a little bit because he didn't really know the course, I guess, at the time. And he was just a nice guy. So that's the story.
I love hearing Troy's impersonation of Tinker Juarez.
Yeah, I mean, Troy was Tinker's mechanic for Cannondale for forever.
Oh, that's really cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah. He's got some, there's some good Troyisms.
He's got some good stories around Tinker
that won't be shared here, except I have one good one.
Was he there, like, we're talking, like, Volvo Cannondale days?
Oh, yeah, he was there.
He was driving the truck.
Yeah, he was driving the big rig.
Fancy. I need to ask Troy if he was ever at the Shelby Farms races.
I think that predates Troy. Troy definitely was at the Outdoors Inc.
That would have been like 95, 96, something like that.
Yep, predates Troy.
Aww.
But he did come to the Outdoors CX race once with the Cannondale truck.
That's really cool. Small world, small world.
One story that is show appropriate. At one point in Volvo Cannondale, they got cars. I don't know if they did every year, but like, I guess they got refreshed with some regularity. And Tinker drove one of the cars that he got down to his mom's. And it was like 18 years later or something, Troy was like down there and like his mom's still driving that car. And I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just like really cool because like, oh, here you go, mom. I got a new car. You can have mine. And then like, she's just like, oh, I got a nice Volvo. And she's just still driving it. So
that was still one of the coolest bikes. It's just so embedded in my memory because that was the days where you couldn't just go online and go find stuff. It existed, but in like 95, 96, it was hard to find that kind of stuff. So you'd go, and when you'd see this stuff or you'd get a mountain bike action magazine or whatever, certain things just stuck in my brain. And that blue Volvo Cannondale CAD 4 with the yellow,
blue and yellow,
with the blue and yellow, had the yellow boot covers, like the yellow headshot cover, and it had other yellow accents, maybe like yellow Magura brakes or something. I can't remember what it was.
But, and probably like the F600 like logo.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But I think it was a CAD 4, I'm pretty sure. And that thing was so...
road bike.
No, yeah, no, so they had CAD 4 mountain. Shot. I promise. Here, I got to look it up now. Volvo, Cannondale, CAD 4.
God damn, I'm wrong.
But because at the time, it was weird. They CAD 4 was like their nomenclature for the highest zoot aluminum.
Aluminum.
Yeah, exactly.
Got it.
Yeah, okay. I don't know. I think they then changed. They changed that at some point for sure. And then the CAD series became the road bikes for, yeah. But I'm 99% sure it was called the CAD 4.
No, you're right. And then I found a picture of the Volvo bike, and sure enough, yellow logos, big white Volvo on the top tube, all the sponsors in yellow on the chainstay. Like, God, what a hot bike.
It was so fucking hot. In fact, Cannondale was smart enough to bring out like a throwback to that at some point, relatively recently, but just such a cool bike.
They did it again. I think we did it. We talked about it while you weren't here. Like the CAD 13s in the lightning colorways even.
Oh, yeah.
Because they did some Seiko throwback. Because Seiko was like the road team that did it. But they called them Heritage and they just painted them in the same way. Yeah, it's just for what it's worth. I know that Specialized does really good paint. But some of those Cannondale things, like over the years, I think Cannondale wins. Just having rad paint.
Yeah. God, but those days of those Cannondales were just so cool because the head shock was just so fucking crazy and the paint job was crazy and it was super light and it, yeah.
And then the head shock would stop holding air and your head tube got real steep real fast.
Yeah, they were.
And then they quit making seal kits and Joel would just go to Ace Hardware and get the O-rings and rebuild them.
Yeah, we did lots of goofy stuff back in the day. But anyway, cool times, cool bike for sure. And I also remember at Shelby Farms, the trail that we rode, and the fact that they had such a high-level race at they were super tame trails. So it was just crazy that they raced world-level stuff there, which was nuts. And we knew the trail really well. I had done a zillion laps out there. And then watching Tinker and the other group he was with too, but I'm going to single out Tinker here. The sections where we were in our like middle ring.
No, Troy was there because Troy has a story about the time that Tinker made a gnarly pass on, the guy that died in a car crash, Tilford. And Troy crossed Tinker won. Tilford crosses the finish line and just cold cock like sucker punches him. Just folds him up like a dollar bill.
Little less Jogmate.
Yeah, and at the time, Tilford's team was sponsored by Jogmate, and Troy apparently looked at him and goes, A little less jogmate, dude, or something like that. Oh,
man. But I remember knowing exactly what gear we would be in on, like, these flat sections. And you could see them coming forever. And they're just, it's Shelby Farms. It's pretty flat. And seeing these guys in the big ring, in, like, the hardest fucking gear in the back, it just blew our minds that you could pedal that hard. That's it.
All right. Well, that's our listener questions. You want to read some patrons and wrap it up?
Absolutely.
We might have, there might be some stuff in Slack, but we'll do that next week because it might be a slow news week next week also.
Yeah, I mean, in all reality, though, you got to, like, give credit to the industry where it's due. Like, why would you release anything during the tour? That stuff either already was released to be raced, or they're not going to, like, if it's not a race item, they're just not going to get it buried in the tour coverage. So, but with that, how about you read patrons? I'm going to excuse myself for some personal needs.
Gotta shit. Okay,
poop.
Our patrons starting at $10 a month.
Oh, wait, I don't know when he's coming, but Mike Jones.
We've got John, Kurt, Jim the fucked up trike guy, Burt Reynolds crusty stash, Zozo, Eric, Burt Reynolds mustache, Taper Bore Pro, My Pal Del, MTV Shenanigans, Ray, Mike Jones, Cam Irish 1, Tennessee Zach, Green Giant, AJ, Leland. Why are people still using my fucking name in Patreon? I'm a different person now. JC, Gordon, Josh, Fart Noises, Chipset Coffee, We Caffeinate Colorado, Ryan, Bill, Aaron, Moose Knuckle Tap Room, home of Open Doors and Heavy Pours, Ty, Noah, Cool Beans, she nasty. No, my name is Clayton, Frank the Tank, Goat Roper, Redacted, Full Face Kenny Loggins, Flying into the Danger Zone on an Amazon e-bike at $11.11 per month. What is the difference between a garbanzo bean and a chickpea? Padamillan Disco Ball at $14 Australian, $20 a month. Matt and Andrea's Questionable Relations. Scott, Joe, I Want a Mustache Ride from Burt Reynolds. Poop Wrench, Harley at 30. Andrea Knows About Shit at 31. And Six Pack Outdoors, purveyors of top shelf shenanigans and cycling events at 50. All right, well, that's our patrons. Matt's back. You good?
Not really.
Okay. Should we wrap it up?
Definitely.
Shut it down.
Shut it down. All right, everyone. Thank you all for listening and good night.
Thanks for tuning in to the Just Riding Along show.
There's some shit coming out of here.